Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman, and I'm with you till 10 o'clock tonight, this beautiful night in the Chicagoland area. Sticking with Chicagoland, 312-981-7200 is our phone number here at the studio as we broadcast high atop the Chicago River, right at 303 Wacker. A beautiful night to look down, see the architectural tours as the rain subsides in the downtown area. Of course, that's good for people who are from out of town, bringing in a relative, a cousin, an uncle. Get the lay of the land and find out who built that building. We got a big show tonight. I'm excited. Matt Muse is here, hip-hop artist from Chicago. Smart kid. He's going to perform in our performance studio. I'm blown away by the talent that this city offers. It's amazing, whether it be rock and roll, whether it be blues or jazz, hip-hop. The city of Chicago is just overflowing with talent, international talent. Matt Muse is right at the cusp. This kid is obviously writing and performing about his life and who he is, and here in growing up in the city of Chicago. So we'll talk with Matt Muse and hear some live music tonight on Extension 720. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be great. Also tonight, let's talk with Carrie Lester. Carrie's great. She joined us on election night. She's been a part of some of our broadcasts about state politics. She covered state politics for years at the Daily Herald and the Associated Press. She is now an editor at the Center for Illinois Politics, and she broke down the capital budget. This is really interesting, as today is a day that most of the area goes back to school. I don't know if you've seen on your social media feeds, everybody with their fresh lunchbox, cool duds, you know? But she's talking about what educational institutions, namely districts and schools in the Illinois area, are actually benefiting from the capital budget and the capital tax. Because, you know, we go to the pump, we got to pay extra for capital improvements and transportation, education, other areas. So Carrie will be here to talk about some of the improvements that could be coming to a school near you. And also, the latest that they talked about, which is fascinating conversation about class size. Illinois does not do well when it comes to class sizes. I think it's somewhere in the 35th in the union when it comes to the largest size. You know, obviously, there have been study upon study that say the if you have less students, the students have a better chance to succeed. But Illinois doesn't do the greatest job of giving resources to keep that number down. It's in the 20s, but in Chicago public schools alone, it's way higher than it should be, and usually way more than what's reported. Carrie will talk about that as well. It's coming up in the 7:30 segment. And also tonight, which I'm excited about, Jonathan Foyle is going to join us. He's the author of the new book, This City Is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America. It's a book. He's a therapist on the west side of Chicago. And we've made strides as a community, and this is a really important topic, because we've made strides as a community to normalize mental illness, depression, things like that. You know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, people weren't recognizing it, or there's a stigma around it. We've achieved lengths when it comes to normalizing mental illness, but we've only done that for the individual. What if a whole community is depressed? What if the toxic stress and everything that goes along with your institutions being closed and underfunded, the violence that's in your community and poverty that surrounds you, what impact does that have on your collective mental health? And I don't know if enough is being done to talk about that. We'll talk about, like I said, we're getting much, much better at normalizing mental illness when it comes to individuals, but I don't think anyone has really approached what urban America, especially in poverty in some of the neighborhoods in Chicago, and some of the being one of the more segregated cities in America and the world. What impact living in those neighborhoods and toxic stress, as it's called, has on your mental health? So we'll have that conversation coming up with Jonathan, who has written the new book on it. So lots to do tonight. I'm excited. I'm always excited to be here. It's a beautiful Wednesday night in Chicago. We'll take a break, come back. We'll get our first lick. We'll listen to Matt Muse. We'll get a little Matt Muse to sort of set it up. We'll do the interview a little bit later in the show. But we'll get some live music here coming up right after the break here on Extension 720. So stay with us. Mayor Lightfoot on with Pete McMurray tonight after 10 o'clock. Maybe that's why she was on video today at the Illinois State Fair. A collection of all of the Democratic leaders for the state of Illinois convened in Springfield for a tradition, Governor's Day, at the Illinois State Fair. I forgot how it goes because they do it in a conference room at one of the hotels. They have, like, you know, your continental breakfast. All the people sit around like it's, I mean, it couldn't be more boring. Look, I mean, it's just like straight up, they're on podiums and that's how it goes. And then they would head out to the fair and they would kind of do it again. But this time it was in front of people and they put on their straw hats and they try to like kind of folks it up. And at a certain point, they stopped doing that where they just did the conference rooms and then they don't go out or only a couple go out or maybe they do something different. And I couldn't figure out from the actual coverage. Pelosi was at the conference room style, but I don't think they did anything actually at the stage that would be at the fair. So they've manipulated the fun part, which was politicians trying to deal with intense heat in the middle of August, pretending that they love farming and agriculture.
And you know, it's always uncomfortable because you'll get a weird picture of somebody eating a fried pickle. You know, it never looks good.
It never looks good. So anyway, maybe Lori Lightfoot was on video for that meeting. So maybe that's because she's going to be on with Pete. She's like, I got McMurray coming up. I'm sorry, Speaker Pelosi. I'm sorry, Senator Durbin. Sorry, all the Illinois Democrats that helped me get elected. But this Facebook video from my phone should do. Just joking around. All right. Like I said, Matt Muse, great hip hop artist who is coming up. He's going to be playing at Shubas coming up this Saturday. He's got a new EP coming out, which is out now. It's called Love and Nappiness. Matt Muse, to say he's a hip hop artist or a rapper does him a disservice because he's a poet. He's had a TED Talk. He's talked about his life and dealing with mental illness himself. And how the music has helped him over time. He's a really, really great story and a great artist. And he's our guest tonight on Extension 720. We'll talk with him a little bit later in the show. But right now, here he is in our performance studio with the single from the EP called Ain't No. Take it away.
They say it ain't no hitter. No, it ain't no. They say it ain't no hitter like a. They say it ain't no hitter like a. They say it ain't no hitter like a Chi-town hitter. Ain't no king like the Southside king. Shouted drip on lake. She my east side thing. With some north side baddies who like the west side swing. That mean I stay on my pivot whenever she come to visit. Don't wanna make her too livid. She bout that life and she live it. I'm bout my work so I give it. 110 out of scrimmage. Y'all talking practice with an atlas. See your way out my village. You dudes AI. Artificial and I'm AI. So official with the braids. Heavy lay, not a fade. Oh, I slay. Less concerned with accolades. Lesson learned is all charades. More concerned with getting paid and making change with what I say. Cause it ain't no hitter like a Chi-town hitter. Ain't no king like the Southside king. If you ain't no, you gon' find out my hey. Cause when I come around, they talking about one thing that it ain't no hitter. No, it ain't no. They say it ain't no hitter. No, it ain't no. They say it ain't no hitter. No, it ain't no. Because it ain't no hitter that they know. Unique's an understatement. I'm so overstanding by ain't no complacent. So adjacent to the promised land, I'm saying no to patience. Tired of waiting, contemplating, self-degrading, self-debating. Leo said they'll try to make you quit or sell your soul to Satan. But you haven't since, so don't you Harvey Dent and split yourself in half of fame or class. You got what they wish they had, but the world is in your grab. So don't break, don't miss the glass. Just keep right foot on the gas and the left one up they sack. Yes, ooh, my homies got me when I'm down. If I'm tweaking on myself, they be like, let me fix your crown. I know who you truly is, it's part of who you let surround. So I only be with iron, we the sharpest squad. You found out the hard way from Cabrini hallways to projects that they all played. From a bucket boy out on Stony up the Broadway. Now you quest love, but you did this here all way. And so they all say, ain't that it, ain't no hitter like a shot town. Ain't that it, ain't no hitter, no. They say it ain't no hitter like a shot town. They say it ain't no hitter, no. They say it ain't no hitter like a. They say it ain't no hitter, no. They say it ain't no. They say it ain't no. They say, they say, they say, they say, they say it ain't no hitter like a shot town hitter. Ain't no king like the Southside king. If you ain't no, you gon' find out, ma. Cause when I come around, they talking about one thing, that it ain't no hitter, no, it ain't no. They say it ain't no hitter, no, it ain't no. They say it ain't no hitter, no, it ain't no. Because it ain't no hitter that they know. Yeah.
Muse.
Yeah, how about that? There you go. Matt Muse in our performance studio. The album, the EP is called Love and Nappiness. And Matt is going to be at Shuba's coming up on Saturday night as part of his record release party. But Love and Nappiness out now. We're going to talk with Matt Muse a little bit later. Here's some more music. That track called Ain't No from the Chicago hip-hop artist Matt Muse. More to come, including Class Size and Capital Budgets. That's coming up here on Extension 720. So stay with us. Thanks, David. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Coffin with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Well, this week, several area schools are back in action. So many cute photos on Instagram and Facebook remind me that for some families, the summer is over and it's time to get back into the swing of things. We thought we'd take this opportunity to talk about two school-related issues tonight. One is class size. The other is resources. When it comes to class sizes, the state of Illinois doesn't do a great job. According to the Center for Illinois Politics story, Illinois is 35th when it comes to largest class sizes. This is a bigger issue for some districts, including Chicago Public Schools. One of the main sticking points with the new teacher's contract is about enforcing class sizes. The average in Chicago is 27 or so per classroom, but if you've ever been in a CPS school, you know that it's often more than the average. And also, let's talk capital improvements. Always a sexy topic. But Governor Pritzker passed a capital bill that would give much-needed funds to several areas in need, including educational institutions and school districts. We're paying for capital improvements with taxes at the pump and other places. So let's find out what that money is actually going to when it comes to Illinois schools. Carrie Lester is the editor at Center for Illinois Politics. She's covered Illinois politics for years, Daily Herald and the Associated Press and other places. Carrie, great to see you.
It's nice to be here, Justin.
All right, let's get right into it. So let's talk school sizes. You guys put out a piece about this. I mean, this is something that ebbs and flows in the, I would say, the zeitgeist of parents. Sometimes it's the biggest issue in the world, and sometimes it kind of flies under the radar. But Illinois does not do a great job when it comes to students per class.
Right. We've had a tough time regulating it, and I was thinking back to my years as a reporter, and in 2010 or so, I covered a school district out in Elgin. It's the second biggest in the state next to CPS. It's called School District U46.
Yeah, of course.
They were going through all these budgetary problems. And so class sizes was an issue, but, you know, having enough teachers was another one. And so I think you're right. It just, it depends on the issues du jour and the socioeconomic differences in communities, and frankly, teacher union clout, because we don't have statewide standards. Some teachers' unions per district can enforce caps through their union contract,
okay,
but not all do.
A lot of times this kind of becomes an issue for Chicago, because Chicago Public Schools has such a huge, Chicago Public Schools is a huge district. And obviously the issue of class size has been something there. But when we talk about the rest of the state, when we talk about some of the suburbs and some of the other districts, is it really fall along socioeconomic lines about class sizes? Do you see in more affluent areas where they're following the rules and procedures and they got less kids, or is it just by population?
It's a mixed bag. You do have some districts out in Schaumburg that have small class sizes, and they have the budgets to institute dual language programs with Mandarin from the kindergarten level up, right? So, there's money to pay for things. But you're also seeing socioeconomically depressed communities out in the Quad Cities and you're seeing where the population is moving out, that class sizes are lower. But I think that's also because people are leaving the area.
When you have such big population when it comes to Chicago and the state of Illinois, when you get a number that's 35th in the union, that's a bad number, because it should be in the top 10 because of the population and because of the amount of kids that actually go to school in this area.
And once again, though, I mean, there's just such disparities regionally, right? You have big class sizes up here in Chicago, and I want to get to this group, this Parents for Teachers report for CPS. But then, in the suburbs, it's a bit of a wealthier area, and so the class sizes are smaller. And then downstate, it's a completely different dynamic. Before the school funding formula was fixed in recent months, you had lawmakers downstate that were saying, our teachers are coming here and telling me they have to teach art out of a closet. So there are all sorts of communities, and that ties in with
what we're going to talk about later. Okay, so let's talk about this report. So this was in your story, just mm-hmm. about kind of looking at how class sizes break down when it comes to Chicago. What is this report?
Right, so there's this group called Parents for Teachers, and it's a watchdog organization. It's citywide, and it looks at, in particular, elementary school issues. And as the CTU is negotiating a new contract, it highlighted class sizes. And we were talking about this before the show. I mean, this was painstaking reporting, but not incredibly hard. They went through the Illinois School Report Card school by school by school at CPS and tracked the class sizes. Just count the kids. And they found that 13 different elementary schools had classes of 40 students or above, including one in Englewood, which had 42 kids. And that brings me back to the way my parents talked about Catholic schools with nuns packing them into a classroom. It's just impossible
to think about that. And there was a point at one, and I don't know if this is, I think I'm taking off my sort of talk show journalism hat and putting on my parent hat. There always was this myth that there was some rule that if you got to a certain number of kids, let's say 25 or 27, they had to put an assistant in or someone that's going to help, that you really thought that was how it was going to play out. But having a kid who's been in CPS, those class sizes are what they are, and the teacher is what he or she is, and that's it.
Right. And the teachers union right now is proposing a limit of 23 to 24 students per classroom in elementary schools, which sounds like it's a big difference from what you're seeing as a dad.
Yeah, I mean, will say just anecdotally, it's never been that small. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 30 plus every time, and it's not an area that's impoverished. There's a neighborhood school, so people are coming in. But when you talk about class sizes, I guess we go back to basics and say, I mean, there are studies upon studies that say that the larger the class size, and you don't have attention for these schools, a lot of these kids kind of fall by the wayside.
Right. And you have to look at the personalities of the different schools and their leadership. Anecdotally, I have a babysitter that's helping out with our family, and she's a CPS teacher during the year. And I said, what about class sizes where you're teaching? And she said, our principal can be kind of vindictive. And last year I dealt with 36. And, you're just hearing that it's all across the board. And some of these teachers are afraid to speak up because if they complain, they're afraid it's only going to get worse.
And that's something that's reflected in some of the texts that are coming in from teachers as well. When we think about this, will this be an issue that the city and the Chicago Public Schools and the mayor can come together with teachers and figure this out so that we don't get to the point where there is no contract and we're not in school after Labor Day?
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, several years ago, you saw all those schools being closed under Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and now you have an interesting perspective from Mayor Lightfoot, who has a 10-year-old daughter. And so, while she doesn't go to Chicago Public Schools, I think she goes to Francis Xavier Ward, which is a Catholic school in the city. I think that Mayor Lightfoot is paying attention to this with not only a administrator's eye, but a mother's side.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because they just switched up. They announced CPS announced their budget and with Lightfoot, and they already are changing some of the things that Emmanuel wanted to do, and instead doing improvements instead of building new schools. So it's all kind of in flux. But when we come back to class sizes, is there a way beyond the negotiation with a union? Is there any other way to actually make sure that districts around the state of Illinois are following what the letter of the law?
Well, we could consider putting a statewide mandate into place. And there are a number of states who did that. I'm just looking at our report. California passed a law in 1996 that capped kindergarten through third graders at 20 students per class. Texas caps kindergarten through fourth grades at 22 students per class. That law was passed in 1995. Florida, in 2003, capped preschool through third grade at 18 students, then fourth through eighth grade at 22, high school at 25. And New York City, which we could look to just given, mm-hmm. given the dynamics, caps kindergarten classes at 25, grades 1 through 6 at 32, and then in 4th through 8, 33 students per class. So some states do it. And I'd just be curious to see, you know, are the kids performing better? The argument is yes, especially in economically depressed communities.
Especially if it comes down to you have 40 kids in a classroom and there's just one teacher. I can't imagine being in a room with 40 people and only one person who is in charge. And when I say people, I mean 9-year-olds.
Right. That's crazy. We've certainly gone away from the ruler and what was used in years past.
Carrie Lester is the editor at the Center for Illinois Politics. We're talking some school issues on what is the first day of school for some districts in the state of Illinois. When we come back, let's talk about capital improvements. The Center for Illinois Politics has broken down where the money goes to some of the schools and the school districts based on the capital budget and the tax that, of course, we're paying at the pump. Carrie Lester here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Continuing here, Extension 720 on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Carrie Lester is here. Carrie, of course, the editor at Center for Illinois Politics, and she's covered politics in Illinois for years at the Daily Herald and the AP down in Springfield. So let's talk about this capital bill. This was a huge bill, and it got through, and it's one of the crowning achievements for the governor. He talks, they talk about how they got this through, and it's going to fix the bridges and roads and schools, everything in between. And they're obviously we're paying for it at the pump and other places. But no one's really talked about what's in it and who's getting what.
Right. This is a $45 billion package. It's the state's first in a decade, and there's all sorts of things. And so, you know, $3.5 billion for school projects alone is not the biggest slice of the pie, but with kids going back to school.
Transportation's like the big one. That's going to fix, we're going to fix
highways,
every bridge,
you know,
everywhere, right?
Yeah, there's lots of problems throughout the state.
There's a big chunk, though, billions, $3.5 billion to schools.
Right, and, you know, we looked at it with an eye towards, you know, what potential favoritism is going on, because this, you know, passing something that is going to cost $45 million over several years for the state to build different things. I mean, that's controversial for not only for Republicans, but for Democrats in these swing districts that have to go home and answer to people in the suburbs, Arlington Heights and Des Plaines and Northbrook. And so were they... Did projects appear in lawmakers' districts?
Are we talking about clout? Talking about what are you getting for supporting this bill?
Right.
And can you suss that out looking at it? I mean, do you see line items where you're like, why is this school getting billions or millions and this school's not, and it's based on the political clout?
Well, it's not quite that simple as always, right?
Right.
But there's something called menu money. I mean, you've heard of this with the alderman in Chicago, right? So this year, according to a source I talked to who works in the House, there was $3 million per representative's district and $6 million per senator's district.
Okay.
The Senate districts are bigger. And they got to pick projects. And those could be roads, it could be bridges, it could be schools. So you saw, for instance, in Round Lake, that's State Senator Melinda Bush's district, right? Like, there's a lot of school construction projects going on up there. But the schools are in need of repairs, and some other things got the shaft. But then,
that's amazing too, because I saw that in the report that you saw in Round Lake. We got to fix the boiler. We got to fix the roof.
The air conditioning.
All these kind of things. And then you see the other line items where you're like, improvements to the gym.
Right. Turf field. My husband comes from Morgan Park on the city's south side. And I said to him, I'm looking at this. And the Morgan Park High School gym is getting a $1 million upgrade. I mean, that's just, you know, when you're seeing smaller line items throughout, $300,000, $400,000, $10,000 for library improvements, things like that stood out. So, you know, if we want to talk about biggies, there's John Hancock College Prep in the city. You probably know where that is, they got $9 million.
So that's not, but this is all, you're putting CPS to the side, because the Hancock, is Hancock a CPS school? It's a, I think it's a, what is it, a charter school? What is it?
It's connected to CPS. Okay. So it was, it falls under a line item for their district. And, okay, and there are some kind of ambiguous block grants.
Because CPS is going to get, CPS, just to clarify, CPS has its own funding structure, and it's going to have improvements. That's what we're talking about with Lori Lightfoot putting out this. We're going to have improvements to all these schools. That's a different
that's
than
a
this
different
plan.
Thing. These are individual allotments.
But why so much money for one school, Hancock Prep?
I don't.
You don't know.
It's a good question. You know, and then you have the Philip Rock Center. It's a school for the blind and the hearing impaired, and that's getting $6.5 million. And so that's in DuPage County. You're thinking, okay, swing vote. You know, maybe on top of needs that'll go to schools. Then we had Round Lake. They get about $3.5 million. Oswego, Downers Grove, Morgan Park in Chicago, North Shore, Greeley School in Winnetka got several hundred thousand dollars. So it's kind of across the board. But
and there's no central formula to this. That's the part that really is the play to this article, that it's just really based on what the lawmakers said or whatever their sort of projects were.
Right, right. And that's what I was badly getting at before. It's like you have these choices of how to spend your menu money, but then on top of that, you can be awarded other projects in your district. You know, the John Hancock School is in State Senator Iris Martinez's district. And so if you look at how much money she is getting as a senator for school projects, it's far in a way more than the others. So why? That's a little bit of a mystery to me, because she's a senator from Chicago, and you would think that was a natural vote. But
so you think that at the end of the day, there has to be some sort of political calculation in where this money is being spent?
To some degree, yes. I mean, I think, you know, like we do with kids, you give them some choices. They get an allotment, but in other cases, I think there are rewards. It's a tough thing to push through. It's a lot of money. That's a lot of additional taxes. You have to go home and you have to justify that to your constituents.
And I think at the end of the day, and why I was fascinated by this article is like actually looking at the breakdown of what is needed for these different schools and different districts. It makes me wonder again. Is this the I'm not saying it's not the right way to spend the money. It is the best way to spend the money, just because I feel like I'm paying in as a resident, but I don't go to Hancock. My kid doesn't go to Round Lake. Why do I care?
Exactly. And, you know, some are very vaguely described. You know, John Hancock is getting $6.9 million in capital upgrades. But then you have the Northwest Suburban Special Education Organization, you know, some developmentally disabled kids. I used to write about them when I was at the Herald. They're spending $410,000 on a new playground. You have demolition of an electric shop in Thornton Township, auditorium renovations at that school. And we were talking earlier, boiler replacements, roof maintenance, sidewalk and curb maintenance Round Lake 16.
In Round Lake, you see exactly what they need it for. Roofs, boilers, where you look at something like Hancock, where they're like, capital improvements. Well, exactly. And I think that, you know, as we are all concerned citizens, we'll pay attention to this. We won't go right to the cynical storyline and kind of look at this. But when you're breaking this down, is the goal to educate the Illinois citizen of where their money is going? Is it to point out discrepancies? What are you trying to do with the article?
We got kind of big on this heat map thing, where look at where the money is going across the state. And of course, it's going to be clustered up in the Chicago area. But, you know, if you look at this map that we did, we have a great data guy. I mean, there's a district in central Illinois and kind of up near the Quad Cities that are getting the larger, you know, central Illinois and downstate projects. And so I feel like those lawmakers who have an issue with Chicago stealing all the money and all that stuff, you hear that over and over down in Springfield, now have another beef.
Yeah. Carrie, great work. The Center for Illinois Politics doing great work as usual.
Thank you.
You are the editor, of course. You also covered Illinois politics for many places, Daily Herald and also Associated Press. And your byline shows up all over the place, New York Times and other places like that. And you got to come back on, and we got to do more talking about what Illinois is spending money on and where they're putting it. So thank you so much for coming
in. Nice to be here.
Always fun to have Carrie Lester in studio. That is true. Is it, you know, as you sort of break it down and use data, because it's obviously a new world order when it comes to how you can tell stories and do journalism. You get to these line items where why one school is getting millions and millions more than another, and what district it is, and to actually, and for Kerry and the Illinois, for the Center for Illinois Politics, to suss out that it's a swing district and that's why they're getting more money. It just reminds you that once again, we do live in the state of Illinois. At the end of the day, that is where we live. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about Chicago, but we're going to talk about the new book, This City is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America. The author, Jonathan Foyles, will be here in studio. Thanks, David. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Matt Muse, hip-hop artist, going to be at Shuba's on Saturday night. More music in our performance studio, and we'll have a conversation with him as well. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Excited to hear more Matt Muse. Man, this kid's good. Well, a lot has been made to normalize mental illness in 2019, right? But as Jonathan Foyles writes in his new book, The City is Killing Me, we may have begun to normalize mental illness in individuals, but we haven't done anything about the environment people live in. We accept that individuals may be depressed, but what about whole communities? Jonathan is a therapist on the west side of Chicago, and he saw in his clients community trauma and toxic stress. When resources are limited and policies close institutions and facilities, what impact does all of that have on people? The book, again, is called The City is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America. Jonathan Foyles, my guest on Extension 720 tonight. Jonathan, great to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great book. And you break this book down in this five different stories about patients that you serve, but you really kind of start by talking about mental health as we know it today, or how the facilities and institutions have really crumbled over time. Mm-hmm. You even give a little history lesson talking about it was the Kennedy administration that really started this country to recognize that there was a need for mental health in America.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because Kennedy's sister herself had a mental illness and received what was a pretty common treatment at the time. They gave her a forced lobotomy.
Yeah, this was in the 40s, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then she was pretty much unable to function for the rest of her life, spent the rest of her life in a nursing home. So I like to think that the impetus kind of started at home for Kennedy with that. So he wanted to create these community mental health centers, which is great, and he wrote a law to that effect, but it was a pretty toothless law. You know, nothing really happened. But what ended up happening instead is you had a lot of the advent of the psychiatric drugs that we know, a lot of the first generation ones, and they were harsh in a lot of ways, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of them we don't use anymore because of side effects and whatnot. But they worked enough to stabilize people who beforehand would have just been kind of kept in institutions, and let them live in the community. So that's good. You know, I mean, I think people do thrive best in the community. But what you had is a very rapid pace of deinstitutionalization without creating the resources to match the need that we were creating in the community.
Right.
You know, so you had a lot of budget cuts in terms of these like large state mental hospitals and institutions that used to exist. I mean,
decade after decade, administration after administration, national and local. Every time it came to budget time, they're like, well, let's take a little bit more off of mental health.
Yeah, and it's not a left or a right thing. You know, I mean, I think both parties have been equally bad at it. You know, and I think it's just kind of been something, been a very convenient thing to cut. You know, the amount, you know, there's a staggering amount that was cut from state mental health budgets following the recession. You know, none of that money's been replaced.
Right.
And
obviously in Chicago, we've heard a lot about this with the former mayor mm-hmm. Emanuel, who came in, and one of the first things he did is say there's just no money for mental mm-hmm. health clinics in Chicago. And, you know, at this point, if you got insurance, good for you. If not, there's one place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the line they gave is that, you know, these patients would be absorbed by clinics in the community. But, you know, that assumes that, you know, there are all of these places ready to accept people with open arms.
Like private places.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
and were that were true. But, you know, the private places that exist, you know, are already, you know, understaffed and overbooked. You know, there was that scare a few years ago where C4, which is one of the big community counseling centers in Chicago, almost closed. And they ended up, you know, being saved in what I understand is a more limited capacity. Mm-hmm. And all you had to save some money. The highest estimate I've seen that it could have saved was $3 million, which is, you know, in terms of the budget for the city of Chicago. I think it was like $8 billion that year. You know, it's just dropping.
What blows my mind about this, too, is that your book really does a great job of pointing out all of the toxic stress and stress that's on communities in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And that could play, you break it down into the categories. But, but you know, that could be anything from safety and violence to poverty to defunding resources for not just mental health clinics, but for institutions like schools.
I mean,
we had the biggest closing of public schools in American history just within this decade. So when you put all that stuff together, there almost feels like there's more need for mental health clinics because of all of these stresses. Why don't governments and leaders recognize that there is that need? Is it just at the end of the day, there's just not enough dollar to stretch?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that is a good question. And I think, you know, I think in some ways we lack a sort of broad picture thinking when it comes to that. And I think because to really think in a systems way about that would force us to confront a lot of things that we struggle to confront, you know, redlining, the history of racism in Chicago and every major city, you know, the things that have happened to make these communities so, you know, economically poor and poor in other ways, you know, and I think it would force us to ask some really hard questions of ourselves, you know, and so I think we just don't do it, you know.
When you were in your practice on the West Side, when you were having patients, when did you recognize that it was more than just the individual?
You know, I think it just started from realizing how different a lot of patients' experiences was from mine. Because certainly, you know, I see patients who I treat specifically for trauma and then others who have anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder. But even the ones who, you know, it's not trauma. You know, I can think of one woman in particular who, you know, just very depressed, doesn't really get out of the house much, you know. So I was, you know, one of the things you learn in grad school, one of the things that helps a lot of people is to get outside more, go for a walk, you know, get some fresh air. And so I suggested that once to her without really thinking about it. And then she's just like, there's a drug dealer who's across the street from my apartment. I've seen him get shot 3 times. Yeah. She's like, I am not going out there.
No, and that's a lot of the stories that you recognize is that the basic tenets of your American life, right? If you're going to look at the white picket fence and we're going to walk around, just even that, go outside and get some fresh air, is not enjoyed by certain communities in this country.
No. And I don't think that our current mental health ideas, you know, therapies are really designed to deal with that in full yet. I mean, one, because you know, some of that is beyond the scope of what you can do in individual therapy, you know. But also, I think because, you know, a lot of therapists look like myself, they're, you know, white, middle class or upper middle class, and we design therapies to treat people who look like us. And so we don't really think about some of these structural issues. Yeah.
It's a great book because you really do almost by chapter lay out 5 different cases of 5 different patients. At the beginning of the book, you talk about, and it's a really great example, and I want to share this example, but you take two names, Michael and Thomas.
Yeah.
And this is really the basics of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Two kids, let's say that they're both being bullied at school, and you can pick it up from there. But the idea that that's really, Michael and Thomas have the same experience at school, they're both being bullied.
Yeah. You know, so you take Michael, you know, Michael gets bullied at school, he goes home, you know, his grandmother's his caregiver, you know, his grandmother sits him down, makes him a snack, she asks him how his day was, he tells her, you know, she may not have any, you know, massive suggestions or things to help, but she listens. You know, she says, hey, how about I talk to that teacher tomorrow? You know, tucks him in, he goes to sleep. And so he came home and his arousal level was maybe at like a 10, you know, and it dropped. And so what that means is, you know, when he goes to school tomorrow, he'll be feeling okay. You know, that bullying experience, you know, may have left its mark, you know.
There's a cause and effect, or there's this idea that there's anxiety and there are ways to treat anxiety.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And, you know, and ways that don't even require someone like me.
Right,
you know,
right,
require
just basic stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, but then if you have a kid like Thomas, who same thing, gets bullied, comes home, you know, his parents aren't home because they have to work longer hours. So there's a neighbor that kind of keeps her eye on him, but isn't really a caregiver. So he, you know, makes a sandwich for himself and watches TV. You know, his parents get home, dad starts drinking, they start fighting, he goes to his room. You know, unlike Michael, where he had these sort of a restful experience, so his arousal level could drop, you know, Thomas just keeps ratcheting up.
He never got to download and say what happened at school.
No.
Right.
You know, and then when he goes to school tomorrow, he's going to be feeling worse. You know, and the way that stress like that works is it just builds and builds and builds over time, you know, and you see it in mental health, but you see it in physical health too. You know, kids, you know, like Thomas have, you know, hypertension, diabetes, you know, even cancer and stuff like that. You know, the stress just, you know, it's hard on you.
And what I love about it, too, is if you pull back, and we know Michael and Thomas as names of in this scenario, boys.
Yeah.
But you pull back and you say, what if that wasn't a boy? What if that was a community? Mm-hmm. What if that was happening?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, those are two different disparate communities happening at two different places in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah.
And you can understand why toxic stress and community stress plays a bigger role in one area than another.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's a great book. This City is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America. Jonathan Foyles is my guest tonight on Extension 720. We're talking about it. We'll take a break, come back, and more on Extension 720. So stay with us. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jonathan Foyles is in studio with me tonight. He's the author of This City is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America, a therapist on the west side of Chicago. Had an opportunity to see this firsthand, and you sort of profile five different patients, and you change the names and change everything.
Yeah,
this is not something that, you know, is straight up somebody's story.
Mm-hmm.
Why go about it this way? Why tell your story and what you've found from your practice through the actual patients?
Yeah, I mean, I think for one reason, it's kind of how I encountered the issues, you know, or like, you know, I read about it in paper and stuff, but it's what really brought it home to me. And I think that just the way that human minds work, you know, it's hard to grasp these big, large concepts like the closing of the mental health clinics, you know. Most of us don't know a patient that was impacted by that just because our lives are structured in such a way that we don't really encounter them. You know, and I think you can say a number like, oh, you know, 3,000 patients, whatever, were impacted. But if you put a name to it, if you just describe the smallest bit of their experience, I think it just helps kind of these concepts and these things that have happened in Chicago that we know about and that we feel concerned about. It gives a face to them.
It really does. And, you know, you hit it on the head, this idea of defunding or closing institutions like mental health clinics or like the schools that were closed in Chicago. We may not have people who you can point to and say, oh, I was affected by that.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I could tell you A, B, C, how this changed my life. You know, like that may not be at your grasp.
Yeah.
But when you look at the combination of all these things, and then you include some of the other factors when it comes to communities, and even the history that you have to take into account when it comes to mass incarcerations and the Jim Crow laws and other things like that, you start to see this pattern of why there's a need for mental health in these communities.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, we think about trauma on the individual level a lot, and of course, I mean, we should, but I think we don't think about the way that it can just grow and sort of, you know, fester in communities over time, you know, because it's, you know, you think about the history of African Americans, and you go from slavery to brief period of Reconstruction, and then Jim Crow laws and lynching, you know, and then, you know, the burst of the civil rights movement, and then, you know, the sort of erosion of voting rights since then, you know, and all of that, you know, impacts individuals along the way, but it also just creates these narratives and creates these stories within families, within communities of, you know, we don't matter, you know, we aren't the people that, you know, these institutions, these, you know, laws are have in mind or are designed to protect, you know.
Yeah, it makes me think too, and unfortunately I'm grasping at what the name of the documentary I think was watching, or we did something before, Pete and I did something on Extension 720. But this idea that, you know, the effect of walking past a school that's been boarded up, that you live next to, that you're a block away from, and then you walk to the other corner and the grocery store that once stood is not there, the clinics, the doctors, everything is not there.
Yeah.
And there may be remnants of that, meaning that you see the building with the, you know, in the case of schools, you see it with the boarded up windows.
Yeah.
And the effect it has on somebody, and not just somebody, but the community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think what it creates is you just can turn around every corner and just receive the message like, oh, we don't count. You know, we're not objects of investment for businesses, for the city, you know. And I think, too, a lot of these institutions, you know, the schools, the, you know, mental health centers, even stores and, you know, shops and stuff like that, they create these third places where neighbors can encounter one another. You don't even have to talk to each other, but just realizing like, oh, the same woman checks me out every week, you know, it just creates a little bit more buy into your community. You know, it's just one more face that you know.
Right.
And even if you never talk to them, it just creates a sense of communal belonging. And when you strip all those places away, you just have a lot of people living in an area with no real means to connect to one another, and no, you know, which further decreases their resources if they do find themselves in crisis. Yeah. Like, who are they going to talk to?
Well, I think with your book, Jonathan, and what I really gravitated towards was this idea that you hear this, you heard it on the mayor, on the mayoral campaign trail when you were about this idea that you need to invest in communities. You know, we have to get to the root causes of some of the things that are ailing our communities, like violence and poverty. And that's all, you can say that all day. So what do you mean investment?
We're
going to bring a couple Best Buys down there? What are we talking about?
Yeah.
And when you read that, the effect it has, and you see here, and you can even make it draw a line to violence numbers and the corollary to closing schools or closing mental health clinics, and you do that in the book, you start to get a better understanding of what that means when you say we need to reinvest in the community. It's not about small businesses lining the street necessarily, but it's about sort of respecting the institutions for some of these areas, regardless of the poverty level.
Yeah, and just creating an overall narrative that, you know, these communities are worth investing in, you know, that we as fellow Chicagoans, you know, as people, as human beings, you know, prioritize the sort of things that make a community tick.
Now that you have been working on the west side of Chicago and you've been able to put this book together and you continue being a therapist there, have you changed your approach or at least your understanding of what your patients are going through based on collecting all this information for this book?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I've definitely grown in my understanding. You know, I think, you know, I've told people, I don't really think if my patients were to read the book, it may sort of systematize some stuff for them, but I don't think they would be like, oh, I never thought of that, you know, because they live it. You know, so I think it's helped me increase my understanding of them and what they experience. And I think, you know, therapy ideally is a process of you kind of learning from your patients. And I think that can be the contours of their individual story. But I think it's also, you know, sort of these outside forces that have shaped their life just as much as inside forces they have.
If it's not for your patients and people who necessarily live in these communities because they live it, who's it for? Who's the book for? Is it for people like me who are like, I'm trying to figure out why these things happen and trying to connect the dots?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I had kind of in mind like somebody who cares but wants to know more. You know, and I've noticed that, you know, even family, close friends I have, they know what I do. You know, they, you know some of the realities of my day to day. But in my writing in the book, especially, but in other stuff I've written, they're like, oh, this really gives me a sense of what you do and how hard it can be. And I thought I was already communicating that. So I think for me, it was just kind of like a moment too of realizing like, oh, I don't think people get what this all really means. You know, they don't have a face.
And I was going to say, I mean, you can go into therapy in your life and you can talk about different things and trauma that might have happened in your life. But I mean, some of the situations that are laid, that you lay out with your patients, this is trauma that the minute you see, your eyeballs kind of know, come out of your face just because of the idea that this is stuff that you can't fathom that people deal with.
No. There's definitely I think for a lot of clinicians when they start out, because I also run the intern program, so I see a lot of them kind of coming in mostly, you know, wide-eyed, really eager to please. And there's always this like, wow, you know, moment that they all experience when they realize, you know, I think one, how much trauma people have experienced, but also just how pervasive it is. You know, whenever I interview new clients, one of the things we address is sort of their traumatic experiences in the past. And I've found the number of times that it's a full no for this list is incredibly rare, you know, and frankly, it's at a point now where if people are say no, I just think like, oh, they're probably not ready to talk about it yet, you know, rather than like, oh, nothing happened to them.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's called This City Is Killing Me, Community Trauma and Toxic Stress in Urban America. The author is Jonathan Foyles. Jonathan, great to meet you, and look forward to I look forward to this being applied in some form, but also love to have you back at some point to continue the conversation. Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Great. Thanks.
This is Extension 720 on WGN Radio. Here's Justin Kaufman.
Rolling along here. Extension 720. It's 10 o'clock tonight. We're back tomorrow night for a truncated show. The White Sox are out in Anaheim. How far is the Angel Stadium from Disneyland? I think it'd be right by each other, right? Anaheim can't be that big. I just feel like at some point or another, they're just going to continue the parking lot from Disneyland and the parking lot from the Angel Stadium, and they're just going to become one parking lot, and you can get a fast pass to go watch Mike Trout. I don't know why. You know why I don't like the Angels? I'll tell you why I don't like the Angels. I'm getting my baseball talk here.
It's a 13-minute, I think it's a drive, 13-minute drive, 3.7 miles.
Right. That's three roller coasters. Right? You ever been to Disneyland? It can sprawl. Once you get into the newer parts, like the California Adventure, it sprawls. So this could be like, you could stand in line for the new Star Wars stuff, get yourself, you know, on the Cars ride, and then go see the Sox and the Angels. It could be part of it, like you stand in line, you got a fast pass. It's a 45-minute wait to see the White Sox bat.
I'm going to New York for our spring break,
oh, nice.
For our summer break in a couple
weeks.
2 weeks,
yeah.
And I'm going to see some U.S. Open tennis.
Oh, my. And then you are not.
And then I'm crossing a bridge to go to Citi Field to see the Cubs play the Mets.
Wow. How'd that work out? How great is that for you?
Yeah.
You're a tennis aficionado.
Another tennis Cubs trip. Second year in a row.
You're a Cubs fan. So when you went to Pittsburgh, there was tennis as well?
Or Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, right, right. That's yeah, they do tennis in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. That's great. When you watch a tennis match, is it fun?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, if it's a player that you like.
Is it better than watching it on TV? Like, I mean, I know the experience of watching most major sports, but I've never been to a tennis match that hasn't been my McHenry, you know,
since
tennis
high
team,
school, yeah.
Which I'm not going to make a big deal about it. Maybe I will a little bit later, but I can go through my trophy case for how many number four doubles tournaments that me and John Hansen won. Not John Hansen from WGN.
John Hansen, yeah.
Johnny Hansen from high school.
Yeah, tennis is great. On TV and in person.
I don't know. I guess it's okay. I love tennis, but I also think as I got older, this is where you and I will differ, I am much more annoyed by that sport because of the fault. They're going to start again. Here it is. Nope, double fault. Ooh, that's 15. Now we go to the other side. It's just too slow. Like I feel like there's only five times in a match where they actually get going and they're volleying back and
no.
forth.
You haven't watched.
Maybe
since.
That's just my attention span.
Yeah.
I get to about the third one. I'm like, I'm out.
I think I know you've talked in the past about, you know, trying to get your son into sports and he hasn't really taken to sports. I think he might like tennis.
I have a tennis story that ended poorly. We have a tennis court close by.
Oh no.
Yeah. And okay, so how did this go? So he's like, oh, I'd really want to play tennis. I'm like, this is amazing. You know, this would be a great entryway. We will play tennis. Tennis is not the greatest game to play with a sort of uncoordinated 10-year-old. Right? That, again, same thing. You go, dunk, you hit it over, it hits the net. Dunk. You know, it's just not at the point where there are no fundamentals. I remember when I did tennis camp or tennis in high school, oh my gosh, you would spend the first 2 months of tennis just doing dumb drills.
Yeah.
You know, like just the swing and the swing or bouncing the ball on the racket 10 times, you know, so you get your discipline. It's all like wax on, wax off
stuff.
So it's not easy to sell a game to your son when he doesn't have any of the fundamentals down and all he wants to do is whack the ball because it doesn't go where you think it goes. It's going to go too far. It's going to go into the net. So it gets real frustrating real quick. So he was frustrated and I'm like, all right, we're going to make this happen. This is going to work. I go, why don't we do some drills? So I did the racket thing where can you hit the ball 10 times on the racket? And he couldn't do it. First time he didn't do it. Second time he didn't do it. Third time it was, why are you pressuring me, Dad?
Oh, no.
You made this experience. And my wife did not back me up on this. Maybe I got a little too into it. Maybe. I don't give it away. You know, I still stand by my approach. But he was like, why are you making this unfun? And I'm like, because that's sports. It's not fun. Playing sports is only fun for a minuscule amount of time. The rest is all discipline and running burpees.
When I'm changing multiple subjects, but when we had played softball earlier, we had a game on Monday, and we need two women to play, and we were short.
Yeah.
And I asked a friend to play. My wife was like, you know, like, I would play, but I'm not very good. And she said, I'm also afraid of Justin.
No. I've worked so hard to not be the villain. I really have. I really muted it. I brought it back down. There was a time, and it follows me, this reputation, where I was, like I said the other night, I was the Andy Kaufman of softball. I was picking fights. I was, making, borderline dirty plays just for the fun of it. And now I feel like I've mellowed. And then to hear this from your wife, who's only known us from this year, I guess I haven't.
No, she's been, she's watched you in action during, like she's been out in previous years on your other teams.
Oh, yeah. So she's seen me.
She's seen you.
Play the game, right. Yeah. Softball's a great example. Like I say this as well. I played, again, I don't want to brag, but I was a Little League star, so I learned the fundamentals early.
Yeah.
I was really into it. My dad takes the side, practice. So I was, by the time I was 8, 9 years old, I could field grounders and throw guys out, the whole bit, right? I was really in the defense more than I was hitting. And so now that stays with me. The discipline of all that garbage, right, stays with me. So now when I do intramural softball when I'm 44 years old, and I'm doing the stretch at first base, stretching out, what a catch! It's because those fundamentals, those instincts, those hand-eye coordination, that's all been ingrained. So if I'm going to get my son into tennis, I feel like we have to go through the whole wax on, wax off. You have to do so much to get...
Yeah.
Because otherwise that game is no fun. Because if you don't know the fundamentals of tennis... That's not a game you just pick up to have fun and volley over the net. It just doesn't work. You just hit the net. Every time you hit the net, oh, go get the ball. Go get the ball.
But when you were learning, when your dad was teaching you, you liked it, though.
I did, yeah.
So even though you were going over fundamentals, which may not have been fun, you found fun. Your son, unfortunately, doesn't find any fun in fundamentals, if you will.
I want to put it, he's just not a sports guy.
Yeah.
So he'll do all that, the discipline for theater. Or for music or something like that. Like he's going to be much more obsessive in that arena than he is in sports. I will say this, that, and I've said this on the air before, I was looking forward to being a Little League dad. I was like, I could grow the mustache. I could have like I could do the half uniform. The kids wear the full uniform, but I'd wear the sort of coach shorts, I'm trying to figure out how to get Bobby to play right for two innings and then come in and play third. But Bobby's not so great. he's all that kind of stuff. I was really looking forward to that. That could have been a moment for me. And I don't want to be the dad who doesn't have a kid and coaches.
I've been there.
Those are the worst coaches ever. We had those kind of coaches.
Yeah. I had a couple of those.
Yeah, we had in the Wonder Lake Little League, which is famous Little League. I'm going to write one of these days, my brother and I are going to write a script that you'll see on an HBO series, a comedy starring Danny McBride, that will be a Little League comedy.
Oh, I'm in.
There was a Chinese restaurant in Wonder Lake. I forgot the name of it. It's like Ed's, something like that. It's a white guy's name for a Chinese restaurant. I forgot what the place, but they had a basement. And the basement is where they would meet all the managers and the commissioners would meet. It's like fantasy baseball before fantasy baseball. Babe, I got a Little League meeting tonight. I can't. I wish I could stay. I got to get over to Ed's. I got to get over there. We got to talk about Little League rules. And they would go down there, and you were not allowed down there as a kid. So all it was, a bunch of guys getting together drinking beers. Yeah. They weren't doing anything.
Eating some egg rolls. But
yeah, it would be like the main star. That's where you go back. You keep going back to that room. That would be the center location, and we can just shoot it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they would be, So I feel like at the end of the day, I can't be that coach because those were the guys who hung on too long. They were really doing it just for the camaraderie to drink beers downstairs. They didn't even have kids are grown.
Yeah.
They're like, Chuck, you know what? The Pirates need a coach. Chuck, you want to get back into it? Nah, I don't know if I can. And my kid's 35 now.
Say your son was into baseball and you got an opportunity to be a baseball dad. And then, I've had experiences where, the kid of the son of the dad always was favored, batting first, playing shortstop, and terrible.
I so, happened to me, I would say, so, I don't, again, I don't want to brag, right? I don't want to make a big deal about this. It's like the, that's what this show should be called. I don't want to make a big deal about this. The I was a first baseman, but I was a right-handed, skinny first baseman. So I wasn't a really prototypical, like the bigger kids, the sort of cleanup hitter, left-handed kids were the ones that usually played first base. Mm-hmm. They had a first baseman mitt.
Right, yeah.
Not me. I was like a shortstop that played first base, but I could. But it was important to the team because I could suck up anything that came over my way. Catch it, you know, like, oh, he got it out of the, picked it out of the dirt. And it was 1 year that I went to an all-star game, right? No big, I don't want to brag, big deal about it. I was in the all-star team. And the coach of the all-star team was another team's coach. And his son was one of those prototypical first basemen. And so he also made the all-star team.
Uh-oh.
And so then they said, you know what? Chad, he'll play first. And let's see if Justin can convert to second.
Hmm.
So they moved me over to second, and it began a dark time, a dark little league time where I had a harder time adjusting to that position. It's a different position. It's a dark time. That'll be season two.
You're like Steve Sachs. You got the yips. You can make throws.
Very Chuck Knobloch. I can't get it to first. But it's just like it's a different. If you know baseball, it's a different position. There's a lot of like covering second and throwing. Like there's a lot of range. It's a much different position. And I got moved because of a coach's son.
Yeah.
See? And then that stuck with me because the next season, I don't want to make a big deal about this, but I was highly touted. And I went and played on that guy's team. I got drafted, and they put me at second. I never played first base again because I was always on the team with Chad.
Yeah, Chad.
Now, imagine if that didn't happen and I stayed at first base, I'd be like Albert Pujols by now.
Yeah.
They'd be like, oh, man, who's this kid who's coming up? I wouldn't be doing Extension 720. I'd be, right now, they'd be like, well, that's second and third. The Cubs are down 11-1, but Kaufman up with the bases loaded. This kid's not a prototypical first baseman. He's a right-hander, you know. I'd be signing autographs at the store like Harold Baines today. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back here on Extension 720. Yeah, so I would say like maybe give it a year, year and a half, 2 years of production before you see Little League on HBO. I feel like the main character will be Al. You know, the other dad will be Ed. We throw a Pat in. Jimbo. Yeah, it's be a great show. And that's I'm casting already. It'd be Danny McBride. He's got this new show coming out now, the more evangelical show, which has a hilarious scene in the trailer where they do a mass baptism at a wave pool and someone turns it on. So people are like drowning in the wave pool as they're trying to get baptized in this mass religious event. I was telling Ro before.
And of course, the catch line is going to be, God will save us.
Yeah. That's it.
I think maybe some action on your part might be helpful to your own survival.
I'm looking forward to the show, though. Do you ever watch any of Danny McBride stuff, David?
I don't even know who he is.
Oh, come on. Eastbound and Down, which was where he played the relief pitcher who was like down and out. He had to go back.
No.
Oh, David.
No.
The premise alone is worth it.
No, it's not.
No, listen to the premise. Listen. He's a down and out relief pitcher. So he was he's like a John Rocker. Remember John Rocker from the Braves? Like he was just kind of like this cocky
journeyman.
Cocky journeyman who flames out. Right, he flames out in baseball, so he has to go back to his hometown, and he's a substitute gym teacher. But he still thinks he's a famous celebrity, and so hilarity ensues around him acting like he's still a major league player when he's not. It's a great series; I highly recommend it. And he also did, which was also great, Vice Principals, which was last
yes.
That was an HBO. So he's got a new show out with John Goodman's in it, and it's about like the kind of the culture around evangelical or big churches, mega churches in the South. And it's, I think the plot from what I can gather from is that he wants to change it up and try something different. And, you know, he's taking over the church from his dad. That's the series. It starts this Sunday. So I'm looking forward to it. I feel like, you know, and everyone has this listening right now. You have people that you will go to the theater or you will go to the, movie theater. You'll go to the TV set for one specific actor or creator that continues to create different things. And Danny McBride is it for me. I just, every time he does something, I'm like, this is great. Fred Armisen's along the same. I feel like when he's involved in stuff, I'm like, yeah, he would be like anything that he makes. That
kind of thing. By the way,
yeah,
Cubs just lost 11-1.
Not good. They're it's almost becoming psychosomatic. They need to do like the natural, where they're like, losing is a disease, because they can't win on the road. They have the, I think it's like the one of the worst, if not the worst, record on the road in the National League. It's very close at this point. They were coming off a good homestand. They had a 3.5 game lead going into the weekend, again, you know, or right after the weekend. And now two straight losses to the Phillies in Philadelphia. Not a great start to this road trip. On the other hand, the White Sox, got to give them credit, taking 2-3 from the Houston Astros, who are World Series bound in my mind. Maybe, I mean, they have some of the best pitching in baseball. I didn't see it at all. Today, I think combined, there were something like 33 hits in that game today. But maybe that's just, you know, baseball in August in Chicago. I don't know. But in Houston, they play in a stadium where the fence is, as, you know, as close as the door to the studio. That's the dumbest. That's one of the, I hate that. I hate that stadium in Houston only because I've seen, like, it reminds me of the Moises Alou, you know, like the Killer Bees Astros of the 90s and 2000s, Lance Bergman or Berkman. And those guys were like the rivals of the Cubs, but they were the jerks. They're jerks of the league. Yeah. And so I always see that Minute Maid Park or Enron Field or whatever that used to be called. That's another reason I hate it. And it's like a home run is a pop-up there where you're like, oh, what a home run! You're like, okay, so Biggio's going to make the Hall of Fame because he hit a bunch of home runs on a field that was like 290 feet.
Do they still have the hill in center field?
They do. That's another thing. Why is there a hill? All right. But this was at G-rate, and the White Sox taking 2-3 from the Astros. That's the way it should. They should take this today, McCann's Grand Slam. They should take this. They should roll with this. And I want to see them getting closer to 500 as opposed to what they have been doing in the second half, which is sliding closer to 90 losses. So this is the moment. I feel like they go into to another kind of playoff contender with the Angels this weekend and beat them up on the road. Go get them. And get yourself a couple of Mickey ears while you're there. Stand in line. Stand in line for Space Mountain before you come up to bat, Jose Abreu. All right, we'll take a break here. Matt Muse, hip-hop artist in our performance studio tonight. The conversation coming up here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a hip-hop artist from the south side of Chicago. Matt Muse has a new EP coming out this month. It's called Love and Nappiness. Muse created a collection of love songs for the new EP. Matt Muse is not your typical musician. He's a teaching artist at Young Chicago Authors. He's delivered TED Talks on hip-hop and even directs his own music videos. In short, Matt Muse is an up-and-coming force. He's going to be at Chuba's on the 17th, and he's my guest tonight on Extension 720. Matt, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And this is a nice project for you because you really, this is a collection of love songs. This is how you've presented this. So why go this route? Why do love songs?
The initial project that I released last summer called Nappy Talk was about self-love. And initially, I had planned to make a disc 2 to it that was, and like, so my form of self-love on Nappy Talk was like bragging and, you know, like, I'm gonna just talk a whole lot of stuff, a whole lot of smack, you know what I'm saying? And so then I always planned to make a part 2, though, that was like a stripped down version, very intimate and very like, actually, these are all the insecurities that hide underneath all of this braggadocio, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that idea was cool, but it kind of got boring. I was like, I don't want to make another project called like Nappy Talk 2. That's weird. So I was like, what's a way I can still be vulnerable and stripped down, but, and still talk about love technically, but in a different way, yeah, you know, than calling it a Nappy Talk. And so then the idea of kind of expressing my vulnerability through the different ways that I experience love in my life, and through these different types of love that I kind of learned in the church, you know what I'm saying, when I was growing up. So that was kind of how it came about.
You know, vulnerability is not a word that you usually associate with hip-hop, yeah, or hip-hop artists. Or you're, yeah, if anything, there might braggadocious that might be all about that might be about vulnerability, but they're not really expressing or talking about that. What draws you to that? What is it about being a musician and being someone who's strong with words that you want to address and explore vulnerability?
I think that I have always in my life been a vulnerable person. I've never been like the type of person that has like a shield up, or like I have no problem expressing my emotions. I have no problem like speaking up on anything. Like, and I know that that's a thing that a lot of cis men deal with. I don't know how to express how I feel, or I'm less of a man if I do. And I've always been the anti of that my whole life. I've been called soft for it. I've been called other things, inappropriate things for it. You know what I'm saying? But that's always been me. So it was like, why is it that that's you? But then every time you rap, we don't get to see you. And so I think for a long time, I've been kind of trying to battle and find a way to bring out my most purest self in my music. Because me talking a lot of crap is also me. Like, that's how I am. I'm really competitive. I'm really like confident. So I guess it's just been a battle to get my real self out in music. So it was never... It was hard to do in the music, but it's always been me. So this is finally me trying to get that more to the surface.
It's refreshing because I think hip hop, and not just hip hop, various forms of music throughout time have leaned heavily on the character. And, you know, like I'm playing a character. Maybe I'm not this person that I'm rapping about. I think it was Jay-Z was on the new David Letterman show saying, most of the people who are out here rapping about being on the streets, they're not from the streets.
No, that's real. I was thinking about that yesterday. It's funny you just brought
it up. But there is this movement, it feels like, and I think that the audience wants it for the artist to be real, to not put on a facade or a character, to do something real.
Yeah, I agree. Especially now, and I think it's kind of been like that for a while. I think 808s and Heartbreak, a lot of people acknowledge 808s and Heartbreak as
Kanye
like
West,
the,
right?
Yeah, as the album that made it cool to be vulnerable. And I think since then, music has just evolved. Hip hop music specifically has just evolved so much where you have Drake is the biggest hip hop artist on the planet. And his claim to fame is vulnerability.
right, you know
what I'm saying? And he attributes being able to do that to 808s and Heartbreak. And I mean, Jay-Z has vulnerable records too, long before 808s and Heartbreak even existed. But yeah, I think the whole thing about playing a character, it's like, it's 2019, man. Like, if you playing a character, like, people can see right through it. You might be making money. You might be high on charts and stuff like that. But people are seeing through it. And at the end of the day, you're probably only going to be important for a year.
A lot of rappers will say, I really came to this at a young age, or I really fell in love with hip hop, or this is what I was destined to do. For you, you talk about at a young age that hip hop was your only hope. What does that mean?
So for me, like, hip hop was my first, like, lessons learned that were not from my family and parents and things like that. But they were things that I felt like I could relate to a little bit more than my family and my parents. Like, I wanted to make music, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to be a rapper. My dad made music, but he wasn't a rapper per se. So, like, I looked up to my father. I looked up to my mom. She could sing, but she wasn't a rapper. So there's this Kanye and Jay-Z, these two guys who are the same complexion as me, who are making music that, you know, Kanye and Common are saying the streets that I live on, you know what I'm saying? And so they're the first example of a black man from Chicago succeeding in music that I saw. And it kind of gave me, you know, early on, it gave me that belief that I can do it. And then obviously the story from the TED talk about like a rap song, in my opinion, literally saving my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's the general like, oh yeah, hip hop is my only hope, because it's the only thing. Like, when they say work should not feel like work, it's one of the few things that don't feel like work when I do it. And I have no desire to work a 9-to-5. So
It is interesting, tying back to this idea of wanting a real experience from your artists. You know, your story that you tell in TED Talk is really about how you're thinking about taking your own life at a young age as a teenager. And it was listening to a Kanye verse where he says, suicide, what kind of talk is that? And you being in that moment and hearing that while you have those thoughts. And that's I guess going back to this idea of being real. I mean, hip hop, because Kanye West was being real in that moment,
that song,
in that song, as you say in the TED Talk, which is great, just, you know, Kanye first, the first part of that is just all about how famous Kanye is, but there is some truth to be told. I mean, there is hip hop in that way by people being real and it being vulnerable. It helps other people, in this case, you.
Yeah, and like, I wonder, like, do they know that? You know what I'm saying? Like, Click literally saved my life. And like, when I tell you what I said in that TED Talk is true, I literally was finna go upstairs, and like, I didn't know how, but it was finna happen. And I just think about that series of events where I walk in my house and like, this person who's never ever at my house, you know what I'm saying, when I get off work, is randomly there playing Click. And yeah. I've never, and like, I love Kanye and Jay-Z. I love Watch the Throne. So like, oh my God, Kanye and Jay-Z have a new song out, you know, on this day.
On this day,
you know what
right.
I'm saying? So, yeah.
I think it plays too for you because you ask if they even know it.
Yeah.
Do you know it? As a young artist coming up, do you, when you're being vulnerable, but you're also very articulate in rapping about things that are real, not necessarily, I don't know, like what I love about your music is I really do feel like you're making conscious choices to rap about things that are in your life and not rapped about that often. Mm-hmm. So do you realize from as a young artist that other kids might be listening to your stuff and being able to take perspective from the music that could help them in some way?
I think I do, mainly because when I first started rapping, it was in my school and it was in front of a lot of my friends. And so they would tell me what the music was doing for them
right.
when they heard it. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, oh, like there's a lot of power in words. I'll never forget my guitar player way back in the day, like 2012, had my first show at like North Bar or something like that. We was in DeKalb doing music, but we came to Chicago for a show. And his dad, old white dude, came with me after the show and he was like, I don't like hip hop. I never like hip hop until I just saw you rap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what? And like, I'll never forget that moment because I'm like, I couldn't even really rap that good back then. But I'm like, whatever I did tonight moved you enough to tell me that you want to explore the genre more. So obviously there's power in words. And I learned that then. Now being a teaching artist, I always rap before I teach. I always say to them, like, it's kind of like a joke, but I'm for real. Like, I'm going to do these raps so y'all know I'm worthy of teaching you raps. And they always beg me to do it again. And so it's like, there's something moving. There's something moving in it. So I'm aware of it. When I write, I try not to let it cloud my thoughts because I don't want to curate my music specifically to any one person. But I do want a person like me or who needs the messages that are related to what I'm experiencing to hear my songs and experience exactly what I experienced with Click. Like, yeah. Oh, wow. Like, if they hear, like, Myself is the song on Love and Happiness that I love the most right now. If somebody hears Myself and it makes them love themselves more, that's a mission accomplished. You know what I'm saying?
Matt Muse, my guest, hip-hop artist from Chicago. His new EP is out this month. It is called Love and Nappiness. He is in our studio. We're going to hear another song from him now. Matt, can't thank you enough for coming in and talking with us, but also performing. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, man. Yeah. Where to start, my tongue bow tied, but I'm so tired of dressing up my pain for them in they eyes and they ears. Fair weather peers be here in low tide, but when it's time to drown, who's still around? My mother tells me God, but we ain't spoke since the car crashed. Yet she insisted I call him before tomorrow passed. He probably replied, same phone, who this? I probably laugh, and then seeing something like this. My parents named me Dexter, but you can call me Matt. I hope you still remember, yeah, we go way back. Me at 16, swearing I'm gonna be a preacher. Me at 21, writing raps and ignoring teachers. Now me at 26, 10 years from you, but searching for a verse to keep the congregation moved. Guess we ain't that far removed, but I'm still stuck and still confused on this unconditional. And if it's fictional or truth, yeah, I'm coming to you for proof. Now mama, any man, cause this world could give her and make my brown feel like a sin. So I'm standing at the gates, I show my naps and now my straights. Would you be turning me away or show me love and let me in? For the love of God. Ain't 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 for the excuse my feeble mind for not knowing to comprehend a coreless love, an equal love that's there no matter where and when. How I be messing up, cause really I be messing up. I cheated, left the heated if I'm keeping it on the up and up. Left pops on red, sent moms to voicemail, claiming I'm locked in, trying to make some records sell. But if my wind ever end, I'm pressing on their doorbell. They that they don't let me in, gon' send my soul to holy hell. Holy hell as far as love received. Who's to say she not gon' leave? Who's to say some Instagram fans gon' really ride for me? I'm lying if I say I never hated who I see in my reflection. I can't even
even trust the love of me. So I'm rambling and scrambling and jamming up your lines. Not they cause to be fine. Now I need my hits addressed. Is it really no conditions? Nothing hidden in your vest? Is it a test or is it all just a finesse? For the love of God. Hey, 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 for the love of God.
I never knew who was loving me. If it's you,
for the love of God,
I thank you for loving me.
Hey, for the love of God. 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 For the love of God.
Matt Muse in our performance studio, the track St. Matthew off of the new EP Love and Nappiness. Matt Muse is going to be at Shuba's coming up on Saturday night. Chicago hip hop artist putting out great music and exploring great topics with his music. Matt Muse here on Extension 720. We'll take a break. Come back. More Matt Muse. Yeah, we get another song. We'll see. Extension 720. We'll get another song in from Matt Muse right after the news. How about that? We don't want to be late to the news. And we'll continue with Extension 720. We'll also talk about what we got coming up this week, because we got a couple of quick shows. Quick shows. It's like you got the long version, the quick version. Quick draw. That's what we should call it. Quick draw Extension 720. Our shows before the pregame starts with the White Sox and the Angels, because it's on the West Coast, and the games start a little bit late. So we got a couple of those coming up here on WGN. Thanks, David. 312-981-7200 is our phone number here in Extension 720, 720 WGN. Enjoying the night. It is fireworks night in Chicago, Wednesdays and Saturdays. So right off of Navy Pier, right behind where we're broadcasting, fireworks are lighting up the sky and freaking us out, because the accompanying sound, the sort of thunder to the lightning, if you will, the boom, it always starts and it automatically feels like someone's breaking a window up here. It's a very weird feeling. It's like a doom, and you're like, ah. And you're like, oh, it's fireworks night. It's very strange. It's like, who's behind me? Oh, it's the fireworks. Matt Muse in our performance studio. We got one more song from him before we wrap up. And Pete McMurray joins us. And Pete McMurray has Mayor Lori Lightfoot on tonight, coming up at 10:20. You heard the promos all day. So Mayor Lightfoot on tonight. Pete McMurray, how fun. All right. Let's do this. Matt Muse in our performance studio, hip-hop artist. He's playing Shuba's on Saturday night. He's got one more in him. Here he is with a song, Shotgun, from Love and Nappiness. Take it away, Matt Muse.
Shotgun.
It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
I see the car first.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I'm looking right at it.
No,
no, that's not the car.
The car.
That's not the car.
The car is right there.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
What? That's the car, dog. I call shotgun first. It doesn't even matter.
You already know. You already know.
No, are you?
No,
what's up, kid?
Know.
What's up? Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Okay, cool.
Right,
you know you're about to lose. Let's go.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
No!
No! What?
No. Run it back.
Run it back.
Run it back.
No, dog.
Run it back.
Get the back.
No.
No, you're good.
Bought a car so my homies won't have to walk again. And lady friends never have to catch a bus again. Let them dudes cat call, you ain't worried at all, cause you riding shoddy in the whip with the dogs. Woo! Shoot through the muzzle, swear my mouth been some trouble since sleeping over at Ryan's. Waking up in a puddle, pissing off all the teachers. Take all the desks, make a huddle. You get the beat, I spit some heat. Now we not being subtle. You know the tension be the littest when they send the whole crew. Not the Breakfast Club, we in here for lunch and dinner too. Doing hood rat with my church school friends. Never snitching, just repenting. Bow your head, raise your hands, amen. Bought a car so my homies ain't never late for an interview, a funeral, or to a court date. Funny they all got the same uniform. Freshman year at Morgan Park and we ain't wearing uniforms, so it's white ones. Every year we warm out, not too many white ones. One hand, point them out. Only black friends at my black high school. Rode the bus with Sarah Connor talking about all of the she might boo and shots that I might shoot. Knowing I'm scared, she got a car, I got jumped. Man, I wasn't prepared. Now I'm bugging her for rides in her Beetle. And she always obliged, always treat me like an equal. So I owe this to my haters, you can call this on the sequel. I will never leave you stranded, you can relax your thumbs. That's for all my day ones. And if Popo do come, trying to see who in the whip, I'ma tell them like this. I'm with all my hitters. I'm with all my hitters. Yeah, I'm with all my hitters. Bought a car so my homies won't have to walk. And I always got a seat if you lost. That's for all my hitters.
Yeah, there you go. Matt Muse in our performance studio. The song Shotgun. The EP Love and Nappiness is going to be at Chuba's coming up on Saturday night. All right. Yes. Such talent. It's great to have artists up in studio here on Extension 720. We continue to do that for you with our brand new performance studio, which is state of the art. Bob Ferguson did the production on that. That sounds like it's right off the album. It's an amazing sound. And we have to thank Fergie for doing all of the tech. And Pete as well, Pete Zimmerman, who, if he's not doing the tech, he's definitely climbing the stairs with amps in hand. It was so much easier over at the old building. It was an actual, you know, street side. It was on the front. It was the first floor. It's right off the lobby. So when you take those big amps and drums and everything else, and you'd have to just walk them right in. But here you got to get all. There's service elevators, and there's sometimes they're out. And Pete just takes that Marshall and he puts it on his shoulder. He climbs up all the way up. So thanks to Pete Zimmerman for the heavy lifting. No pun intended. All right, we'll take our last break here, and then we will continue here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 rolling along here till 10 o'clock. Pete McMurray coming up here on Extension 7, or on 720 WGN. But it'll be on Extension 720 by extension. Coming for the crosstalk. I've been seeing a couple of pictures on Facebook today. Of course, today, I always find it weird that they start the school year in the middle of the week. So there are some of the suburban school districts started today. And congratulations to you and your family if you're one of them. That's an awesome day. It's also, I think, I don't know, I always feel like it divides us as a community that there are, you know, because we're the Chicagoland community, that half of the schools start now and another half in a week, and then CPS doesn't actually start until after Labor Day. So, and the media sometimes, and I'm guilty of this as well, they'll treat the Chicago public schools as the first day of school story. So you'll come out, the 10 o'clock news or Extension 720, what it might be, just being like, well, today's kids go back to school. And you're like, hey, man, I've been back in school right for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But today was the day, and I'm always blown away. I guess I get it. They run a kind of trial run. They start on Wednesday so they can get Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and they're to the weekend quicker.
When I started my freshman year of high school, we started on a Wednesday, and all my friends, my closest friends, went to a different school, and they started the following Monday. And they, like, that Wednesday, my first day of school, they all went to Great America. Oh. And I remember I was crushed. I was, like, thinking about transferring. I'm serious. It was, like, that serious.
Yeah. That is the secret. I give your friends credit because what I've learned, the only time in the whole year that I will go to Great America will be the last week of August. because it's the one week where all the suburban kids are back in school and the city kids are not. And so you have a better chance of getting on the Eagle or whatever, riding the Batman, the Superman ride, the Colossal Lighter. So congrats to all the families that are going back to school today. It's a lot of districts and a lot of fun photos of watching kids with their lunch boxes and their trapper keepers. And I have to say, it's strange because I'm in full summer mode right now. My family, my son does not go back to school until after Labor Day. So I'm still in summer break. This is, I'm the best is yet to come. I got 2 weeks, 3 weeks until we're, after Labor Day, right?
Yeah.
You're going to New York to watch some tennis and the Cubs and the Mets.
Yep.
And, that's good. I went and saw the Mets. I want to ask you about this. Do you have a disdain as a Cubs fan for the Mets?
Yeah.
So you go back, you sort of, because National it's in League the East. DNA, it's the National League East and the Mets and the Cubs in 84 and all the other times where, and even go back to the 69 Cubs.
Yeah.
That's like born into it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Don't like the Cardinals, don't like the Mets.
Yeah. I mean, I get the Cardinals because it's a rivalry statewide and it's kind of like Packers-Bears, but I don't get the Mets because it comes deep-seated from being rivals for so many decades. Because I went and saw the Mets and the White Sox play the other week, or when they were in town, right? The Mets were in town. And I at first I was like, oh, I hate the Mets. I'm like, I don't really hate the Mets. I don't really care. I guess I really don't care. As a White Sox fan, I have no opinion. But they had Todd Frazier plays third base for the Mets. And so I was like, well, I'll join my brethren Cub fan in not liking the Mets because they have Todd Frazier on the team.
And you hated Todd Frazier while he was
Todd
on the
Frazier.
White Sox.
When he came to the White Sox, we were very excited about it because I think it was a mid-year kind of thing. I think he got traded from somewhere. I forgot. Maybe he came in like to kind of... I don't remember. The White Sox fans have to remind me if he was a off-season acquisition or if he came in a trade. But he was supposed to be some sort of, exciting piece, the final piece. And he was on some of those teams. But he was also on that team that will go down in history. And I can't remember what year it is now. But it was the year when they decided they had to rebuild because Chris Sale was cutting up jerseys and LaRoche's kid was running around the clubhouse, and Adam Eaton and Todd Frazier hated each other. Yeah. They were probably the most. It was Robin Ventura was the manager, and you just kind of got the vibe where you're like, "This is a train wreck." And Frazier was never really materialized here in Chicago. So anyway, when the game was going on, there weren't a lot of people. I was probably had nice seats, 10th row or whatever, and Frazier, there was a ground ball to Frazier, and he botched it. He kind of didn't make the play, right? And I think the Sox scored. They got a guy in, but it kind of ruined Noah Syndergaard's night. He had a perfect game, he didn't have a perfect game, but he was just like mowing the White Sox down.
Out.
And might have had, two beers, but it just gave me a little looser to get into full 1930s baseball, you're a bum.
Doing some heckling?
I was doing some heckling, straight up heckling on Frazier. Loud enough, It's like, hey, Frazier, you're a bum. I don't like to do, I like to keep it clean at the park.
Yeah, of course.
And I like to bring I like to bring my insults back to the heyday of baseball, the romantic time where we're in tweed fedora hats, the full suits when you go to the game. You're a bum and you'll always be a bum. Like that kind of stuff. I love that stuff. So I was doing that. I was just like, Hey, Frazier. But my wife got mad at me because, I was really having fun. There was a guy behind me who was laughing and other people that it really got the attention of the whole section. Like the whole section was loving it.
Man.
Because they were like White Sox fans and they're like, oh, great. Someone's giving it to Frazier. We love it. And I was being, somewhat clever. You're terrible. That kind of thing. Hey, Frazier, look at me. Classic heckling, right? And I was at a point where I kind of stood up a little bit. And I was just like, hey, Frazier, look at me, Frazier. And my wife's like, you're an idiot. Sit down. And I was like, I was kind of like getting adrenaline from people paying attention. Like so I was like on stage. Yeah, I was all excited.
Right, yeah. Getting some good feedback.
Yeah. And I think I feel like he enjoyed it. Like, I feel like Todd heard me, and I think he enjoyed it.
He's got to hear it.
Yeah. Right? I think he was like, well, that's good old-fashioned ribbing. You know, I've heard worse. I've heard worse. Yeah, right.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but so, yeah, I didn't thought about that, that you're going to go there and you're going to have to sit there with Mets fans who are going to have problems with Cubs fans, right?
Yeah.
They don't like Cubs, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, I just kind of sit there. I mean, I'll, you know, clap for my team, but I'm not going to, like, get in a fight with anybody.
So if Frazier boots a ball at third, you're not going to start heckling him?
No, I'm not a heckler. So cheer for my, I'll probably wear a blue shirt. I might not have a Cubs logo on it, but I'll wear a color.
The two players in baseball that I love to heckle, Todd Frazier. And I love to heckle Hunter Pence.
Oh, yeah.
When Hunter Pence is in town, and I've had that a couple times, both at the Sox Park and the Cubs. There was one time I was at Wrigley Field, and I was second or third row, and I got Hunter Pence's attention. And since that point, I've been like, I'd like to be Hunter Pence's heckler. You know, like, I'd like to go on tour. And, like, they kind of, the NBA had that for a while, right? The NBA had, like, the New Jersey Nets guy who sat behind the, during the Jordan years. Like, there was, like, a guy who was known to be the heckler from that stadium. Like, he was very clever or whatever. And I think that would be I'd like that honor to be bestowed upon me. That'd be a nice thing to be like, oh, and look, like, for SportsCenter to start, like, Hunter Pence's personal heckler. I get nothing against him. I'm sure he's a nice guy, and I'm sure he's
I don't know.
You know, whatever. It really is. It's arbitrary. I mean, it's random. You know, just be fun to heckle Hunter Pence around the country.
Yeah,
you know, show up in Cincinnati. He plays on the Rangers now, right? So I'd be like, now I, you know, like in Houston, I'm there. He goes on the road. He's in Oakland. I'm there. You know, whenever he plays any team in the AL West, I'm there. So it's just even big games for the Rangers, weekend series in Arlington, I'm there. I think it could work out. A really good career change for me. The other thing I saw on Facebook today as we wrap up is that I saw three different photos, three different locations of people putting up photos of trees that are moving into their autumn look.
Oh, no.
Yeah, green trees turning into orange leaves and yellow leaves. And I don't know why, if it's something has to do with the climate or too much rain or too much heat and now not enough heat and it thinks it's fall or something like that. Or maybe my suggestion that somewhere along the line we didn't carry the one and the calendar's all off. But trees in the Chicago area are starting to, what do you even call it? What do you call
them? Die and fall?
Yeah, but what do they turn fall leaves or something to autumn? Yeah, they're starting to look that way. So I don't know what's happening, but I've seen three different, it's completely separate areas. One was the suburbs, one was downtown, one was a park. And they're just like, what is happening?
Yeah, I'm not ready for that. I mean, I love fall. I love fall. I love, you know, jeans and sweaters and football and pumpkin spiced things.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
But, you know, after that, it's terrible for 6 months again.
It's the same thing with school.
Yeah.
School, you can, you know, starting right now means that fall's coming a lot faster.
Yep.
I'm still in summer mode.
Yeah.
I still have my kind of half khaki, half linen pants on. And I got a flowing linen shirt in my, you know, I'm not wearing any shoes. I got sandals on right now. Really like a lot of beach wear. I'm going full on beach wear for Extension 17. Yeah, so I'm not ready for fall as well. All right, we'll take a break here, and then Pete McMurray will be in studio taking over 10 o'clock here on 720 WGN. All right, that's going to do it for Extension 720 tonight. Pete McMurray's up next. Good to see you, buddy.
Pete Zimmerman, your Cubs look good tonight. They were only down 10-0 in the sixth inning. I didn't see the final score. Yeah.
Wow, man. They're, I don't know what it is.
They can't win on the road.
It,
it's over.
I was going to say, is it like a mental thing? Is it a mental thing?
It is. They're not winning the World Series this
year. You think that professional baseball players at this point, they can, like anything else, they just like you can't throw from second to first. They just can't win if they're not at Wrigley?
Right. Where Remember Joe, the year that they won in 2016, if they went on a losing streak, they'd wear dresses on the plane or pajamas. Where's
that's
that?
All, that's all gone, right?
Yeah.
Jake Arrieta.
Jake Arrieta.
See, they need Arrieta.
Right. They need
the
Arrieta.
Guy.
Shoot. Yeah. Man.
What do you got? Well, you know, we got the mayor on tonight, which is great.
We have the mayor on around 10:15, which is good stuff.
How great is that?
Yeah. You're talking about autumn already. Leaves changing, man. We still have summer. We have the Air and Water Show this weekend.